This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com.
Welcome to yet another episode of Rough Draft, your daily dose of essential web writing advice. I am your host, Damian Farnworth, the Chief Content Writer for Copyblogger Media. And thank you for sharing the next few minutes of your life with me. Like I mentioned yesterday, this is a monumental week for Rough Draft. See, I've broken, for the first time, the traditional monologue mold for a bit of dialogue. Dialogue between me and some of the smartest brains in web writing. Yesterday, you heard from James Chartrand and her odd story of overcoming obscurity. Today, you'll hear from none other than the princess of profanity, Erica Napolitano. Whenever I talk about authenticity or finding your voice, Erica is always my go-to person as someone who's owned their personality with unapologetic, straightforward flair. Don't let her blunt approach and love of swear words drive you away, though. She is utterly human, full of compassion, humor, and business wisdom. But she wasn't always that way. Her story of getting there is one of heartbreak. Trust me, you will cry. I did. And it's there with that story that we open this episode of Rough Draft. Okay, recording now. State your name.
Erica Napolitano.
Now tell our listeners what you do.
I get people and brands unstuck. In 2010, I had the incredible gift of meeting this man named Jason. And out of nowhere, I slipped and fell in love with this guy who every day made me feel like a princess. Mm-hmm. And I'd never had somebody in my life before who was just like, for all you are and all of your nerdiness and your geek and your whatever, you know, you're the woman I want to be with. And he died suddenly on Halloween in 2010, following surgical complications from a surgery he never should have ever had to have at age 29. Mm. And after two heart attacks in 2 days, he departed. So that shredded my life for the next nearly 2 years and really, really f***ed me up pretty bad.
So here's why I brought that up. So I've always admired you and I've always admired your work, but that talk, that introduction, that story changed something in me about you, how I felt towards you, because I saw a side of Erica I'd never seen before.
You mean the human?
Yes. Right. Well, because, I mean, your online persona is pretty tough. I mean, would you agree?
I wouldn't necessarily classify it as tough. I would say I'm very straightforward.
Okay.
I'm also, I mean, some people call it blunt. Mm-hmm. Other people have called it b***y. But there are plenty of people who confuse bluntness with b***iness because they don't, that it's not a skill that they practice and that they're familiar with and that they're comfortable with. So I take that. I don't take it as an insult at all.
So you have this segment or section on your blog up called the bitch slap. And I know that you're not abusing female dogs. Tell us a little bit about what that is.
The bitch slap is a section where I take an issue that has been very, it's been a challenge for me in my life and or my business to deal with. Mm-hmm. And I turn that on myself and I'm smacking myself around for going, seriously, you're going to let this screw you up? The bitch slap, I mean, that's a, when you talk about bitch slapping somebody, that's like, that's an arresting move. And so when I apply that arresting move to my life and my business, then it's a transformation of behavior. I'm someone who's not interested in change. I'm interested in transformation. Mm-hmm. I mean, moving your sofa is change. Deciding that you shouldn't be living in the house you're living in because it makes you sick to go there every day and deciding to do something about it, that's a transformation.
So is that what you mean about like getting people, organizations from being unstuck?
Yeah, yeah. When people contact me, they have hit a point in their business, in their lives, in their careers, where what is going on is no longer acceptable. Mm-hmm. The way they feel is no longer acceptable. And when they reach out to me, I mean, that's a huge step of trust. Mm-hmm. It's also a very large effort to make to reach out for someone and go, I am so good at what I do, but this thing, I can't do it. And I need help with it. So when people reach out to me, that's an incredible ask. And I don't take that lightly. And when I go through the process of getting a company or a person unstuck with the issue or issues that they're bringing to me.
So do you think that your persona, your nature, just who you are, that builds credibility for people? Because they know like, hey, you know what? She is blunt. She is to the point. She is the person who is going to get me. If there's anybody out there who's going to get me unstuck, it's going to be Erica.
When people get to me, they know who I am and what I do. Mm-hmm. And then it's just the conversation of, number one, I don't have to sell myself because right. It's very plain. But number two, it's our mutual discovery process to figure out, can I help you? Am I the best person to help you? And are we going to work well together?
So what kind of person do you turn down?
People who take way too much time to make decisions. And I also, I don't work with people who want to haggle over price because the value that I offer is incomparable. And you've also probably been referred to me by someone who's worked with me, which is how I get 90% of my business. They paid for it. Why are you not willing to? And the other big signal for me to not work with people are people who are unwilling to listen to hard truths. Because that's, you know, I have certain questions that I'll ask on vetting calls with clients, and because I want to hear how they respond. And I also want to hear that they have a sense of humor about what we're about to dive into, because it's hard and it sucks, but the results out the other side are amazing. Mm-hmm. And if you're not willing to laugh as we go through a shitty process of figuring out what doesn't work and how can we get it out of the way so we can get to the stuff that does, then life's too short.
It'd be sort of like fighting another uphill battle, right?
It is. It's being a professional salmon, and that's not my gig.
I like that. So you are my textbook example of someone who nails authenticity whenever I'm talking about that topic. Not as like, this is what you should imitate, but in the sense that you, because you've owned your nature and you're an unapologetic lover of who you are and of profanity, and it's part of your nature. And, you know, most people can't pull that off, but, you know, because usually it comes in the context of talking like authenticity. Is there a line that can be crossed? And like, well, it just depends on who you are, right? I think it's more of like sort of this personal thing where I could never pull that off because it's just not who I am. I would be a fake. I'd be a, you know.
Well, if you have to pull it off, it's
right.
Not who you are.
That's right. That's good. Exactly.
That's a pretty good explanation of is it authentic or inauthentic? Are you pulling it off? It's not authentic.
Right. Great. Great distinction. So would it be safe to say that this is or has become part of your brand?
Well, I'm the only asset that I have.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a, you know, I wrote a book a couple of years ago. Great. Buy it. Don't. Whatever. When people come to me, what I don't want them to wonder is, why am I here? And is this going to waste my time? I consider the biggest cardinal sin in this world to be wasting someone's time, because it's the one thing we can't make more of. So if I show up on your website and somebody said, oh my God, you've got to meet Demian. And I get there and I'm like, what is he trying to say? I don't, who is, what is he? It's like, I'm hungry. I'm going to go get something to eat. Mm-hmm. And if that's my process, then you haven't done a good job of sharing with people who you are.
So were you ever confused about who you are or who you were?
Maybe a better way for me to answer that is, who I am today is not who I was 7 years ago when I started my blog.
Now, why is that?
Because human beings change and we learn things. And I think the biggest evolution I've gone through, and you know, I know one of the things you want to talk to me about profanity, but is I used to think that everything I published had to have incredible import attached to it. You know, because I took writing in a public forum very with a great amount of responsibility. Mm-hmm. And I was also, you know, 8 years ago, I was a much angrier person than I am now.
Really?
You know, somebody you love dying on you shifts the hell out of that and pretty fast.
Right.
But I was a much angrier person. And if you compare a lot of my earlier writing to the work that I published today, I mean, I would say that what my audience has said is the work that I publish now, whether it's business or personal, is that it has a lot more humanity and compassion to it. And it's still just as funny and sweary and entertaining, but it has a lot more human to it and a lot less persona. I know that that's a process that many writers go through, whether they're novelists or columnists. It's coming into your own, and mm-hmm. it takes trying a lot of things to figure out what works. And we all, as artists, you know, whatever medium you practice in, we all start off as imitators and mimicking,
right?
Because it's what we see, and we're taught to do that in school. Okay, we want you to write a humor essay. Okay, we want you to write this. We want you to write a haiku. And so you're given all of these tools to write, and then you figure out that I can write a sentence fragment and not get like thwacked with a ruler, and I can do that. You can. And it's, for me, the journey of finding and continuously honing my voice has been about giving myself permission to fail, mm-hmm. and giving myself permission to not always be right, and giving myself permission to share with people that I don't have all the answers, but the journey that I've gone through to try to figure some of these things out is pretty fucking hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a sense of humor about it.
So who taught you how to swear?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it was Richard Pryor's stand-up. Maybe it was Eddie Murphy. Like, these are the things that I watched when I was growing up.
Yeah.
The comfortability that I have with profanity, sometimes there is no other word that I can think to use other than the word f-. I had a teacher in junior high that said, vulgarity is the feeble mind's way of expressing itself. And I'm like, today I'm like, bitch, do you know how much money you make using the F-bomb? And so I call that pretty goddamn enterprising. But here, how can I say this succinctly? There is gratuitous use, overuse of profanity. And then there is the well-timed insertion of a profane phrase that, if it is who you are, then that brings home a point like no one else.
Right.
But there are people who can make that point without ever using profanity. It's a matter of, you know, going to the mall, and it's why there's 50 clothing stores there. All of them probably sell black pants, but mm-hmm. are they the black pants you want to wear? For me, profanity is in that learning curve of using it. I find new ways to use profanity weekly, and it's an adventure. I think yesterday I did the word douche weasel, and I'm like, ow, that is, I would love to see that animal. Can somebody draw that for me?
That's good.
But it's like, you know, Fuckwittian, Asfolian, mm-hmm. you know, there, sometimes when you create a word like that, that people haven't seen before, they sit up and they take attention and they're like, what is that? But that's funny. And it makes me think of something, and they pay attention, and they don't lean in, they lean forward, and they get to the edge of their seat and they pay attention.
So you have no fear that, like, you will dilute the catalog of swear words?
No, I mean, my God, the English language is ever evolving. you know, if we can add Instagram and selfie to the dictionary, the weird thing is that there are English speakers in general. We operate with such a limited lexicon as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this vast lexicon that exists beyond the words that we use every day. And so my challenge to myself is to go, what can I learn?
Mm-hmm.
How use what I know to raise the bar on. I never consciously think about how can I raise the bar on how profanity is used. But I think, how can I have a better conversation about an issue and still be myself in that conversation? And most of the time, profanity comes into that because, you know, it's glorious.
So is it to shock? Is it to entertain? Is it to all of the above?
I don't even think about that. I think about, you know, I just sit down and write, and I don't know what your writing process is, Demian, but I know you're prolific as well as a writer. When I sit down to write, it's keyboard vomit. It is. There's no drafting. There's no nothing. My readers know, and I get for this all the time. People are like, how can I take her seriously when there's typos in her work? Because I'm a human being. Mm-hmm. You tell me the last time you didn't make a typo. It's easy for me to go in and fix. If you're saying this 1,200 word post is diminished because I used a your instead of a your, when you fully know that I have the mental capacity to have a grasp of the English language, just you. And so it's not to shock. It's not to entertain. It's because the words that show up on the page are the only way that I know how to tell that story in my voice.
So you strike me as someone who will have beautiful children.
No. Well, I'm 42. I don't necessarily think that's going to happen. I also went into early menopause this year. My ovaries went to Tahiti without me. So yeah, you know.
Okay, let's just say you adopt hypothetically very beautiful children. Okay, do you plan on teaching them how to cuss?
I will teach them the value of the words.
Yeah.
I don't want them to be afraid of words. I think there are also so many words in our, you know, in the language that are used as, I mean, slurs are hugely important to have. From an education standpoint, I think our current wave of children doesn't have the proper education on what used to be slurs, why they used to be slurs, mm-hmm. What might used to have been a slur but is no longer a slur, why, you know, cultural appropriation is a huge conversation in current society. You know, why is it okay for someone to use a word that someone else can't, and continuing that dialogue. And it all falls along the realm of what somebody would consider to be profane or vulgar. And if you can educate people to make a better decision about empowering themselves to choose the words that they use daily. I mean, I can walk into a room and not swear. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think for the better part of this, you know, until we got on the topic of swearing, I mean, I can...
I was going to ask if something was wrong with you. No, I'm kidding.
I'm capable of having that kind of conversation, but when I feel profanity is necessary, or when it just comes out, it comes out.
Sure.
But I think that educational aspect is really missing today because... You know, I hear young people using slurs as I live in a very urban part of Chicago. I walk down the street and I hear people using words that I would never have come out of my mouth. And I have a pretty fucking dirty mouth. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, and they aren't even considered profanity. And I'm like, do you know what that word means?
So does it shock you when they say those things?
It does. Mm-hmm. Because they have no reverence for the history behind that word. And I consider myself to be an ongoing student of humanity and history. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my visual porn isn't pulling up, you know, girl on girl action on, you know, RedTube. It's going on the History Channel or Netflix and watching these amazing documentaries about the world before I ever came into it. I would love to see a shift back to people appreciating and having a continued regard for what came before them.
So let's close with this. So to tell the people, like I mentioned before, you are a textbook classic example of someone who's just being themselves naturally, just very fit, very comfortable in your own skin. Talk to somebody. What would you tell somebody who's not at that point and yet needs to get to that point?
Swing the bat. Ball comes at you, swing the bat. Don't be afraid to miss. I mean, for anybody who's still trying to find their voice, the one piece of advice I'll give you, there is nobody in this world out there like you. It is a lot easier to wake up in the morning and be you than it is to be someone else.
So there's clearly a difference between like ranting and then like having a sort of purpose behind a rant, I guess.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you said that because this is what I have no time for.
Right.
If you want to have a blog out there, God bless you. And now your job is to stand out. What is not going to make you stand out is being more of the noise. People don't open their computer every morning to hear noise. What they do want to hear is, hey, I have a problem and here's how I solved it. And by the way, in between problem I had and how I solved it, hilarity ensues. That's what people want to read. If you want to build a community of ranters following you, great, have at it. There are plenty of people out there. But if you want to build a community that continuously comes back for the humanity of the ride that you're going through on this wild amusement park called life, that's a better choice.
So, friend, are you making the better choice? The better choice of being who you are, of owning your personality, of being comfortable in your skin, all the while being a lover of humanity? Are you making that choice? I hope so. Because if not, I just might send Erica over to your house to kick your teeth in. You can follow Erica on Twitter at Erica Napo. Or visit her website, ericanapolitano.com. Also, check out the show notes for Erica's TED Talk. And by the way, if you're getting any value from this podcast, any value at all, do me a favor and jump over to iTunes and leave me a rating and leave me a review. Let me know how I'm doing. I love hearing from you. It always makes me want to work harder. And finally, in tomorrow's show, I'll introduce you to Stephanie Flaxman, copy blogger's editor-in-chief. Among other things, you'll discover an easy trick to solving most of your proofreading problems. This is for anyone with limited time and limited grammar skills, like me. Until then, take care.